Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, 15th of July. Our guest this hour invite you to think about these questions. Is it possible that even though teens today have more freedom than any other generation in history, they're actually missing out on some of the best years of their lives? Is it possible that what our culture says about the purpose and potential of the teen years is a lie and that teenagers are its victims? Is it possible that teen years give us a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for huge accomplishments as individuals and as a generation? And finally, what would our lives look like if we set out on a different path entirely, a path that required more effort but promised a lot more reward? Joining us this hour, the authors of Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. Alex and Brett Harris are our guests. They are twin brothers. And this started out as a blog, actually, a few years ago. And they are now the most widely read teen writers on the web. They are frequent contributors to the website Boundless. They serve as main speakers for the Revolution Tour. We'll ask them what that term means in a moment. And they have been featured on MSNBC, CNN, NPR, in the New York Times. They're with us today. Actually, this was a listener request, so we're happy to have this show on the air. It should be an interesting discussion. They say that they are Christians, unashamedly so, and they don't just settle for the label. Even though they fail more than they succeed, we try to live our faith in every moment of every day. Because of that, we want to make sure our readers, Christian or not, understand exactly where we're coming from with this book. Yes, Doing Hard Things is not just for people who believe the Bible, but we would never have written the book or encouraged you to do hard things if we didn't have a Bible-shaped, gospel-driven view of life. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Alex and Brett. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Alex, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Kathleen. Thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Brett, thank you so much for being with us.
You know what?
Be here.
Brett, are you here?
I'm trying to push through. I'm getting some major echo on my line, but
all right. Well, we'll just go ahead and persevere then. It's okay. Great to be on with you, Kathleen.
Yeah, so who's – wait a second. Brett is on – Brett, where are you?
I'm Portland, Oregon.
You're in Portland, Oregon. And Alex, are you there too?
I'm actually currently in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, you're in Denver, Colorado. So tell me where – the book was written a couple of years ago. Are both of you still in college?
The book was written and came out last year in 2008, and we started our first year of college last fall – fall of 2008. So we are just finished up our first year of college and our first summer break right now, and then we'll be headed back for just our sophomore year this fall.
Uh-huh. And the whole idea of teenagers doing something bigger with their lives, am I wrong in saying that maybe it started when your father gave you a list of books a few years ago and said, here would be some good summer reading?
No, that's exactly how it started. We were 16 at the time. A lot of our plans had fallen through that summer, and so our dad stepped in with a big stack of books, including titles like The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman, Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. And so we read through those books, and it opened up our minds to a much bigger world than we previously occupied. And specifically, Friedman talked about young people in other countries like China and India, how they were applying themselves, how they're using their teen years as a launching pad, and contrasting that with American young people and our entitlement mentality. And that was an aha moment for us because we realized that Friedman was saying there's different results for living the teen years different ways. And if that's true, then what our culture tells us is a lie. Those young people in America were told it doesn't matter how we spend our teen years.
Hmm. And our expectations really for the teen years, and it comes from so many different areas, as you say in the book, is to be goof-offs, right? To have all these significant problems with sex and drug and alcohol and not doing very well in school. We, you know, it's here they go again. Those teenagers, Alex.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that's the thing. We have very low expectations for young people. We're expected to be immature, rebellious, foolish, and just plain dumb in a lot of ways. We're not only expected to do those things that we shouldn't, but we're definitely not expected to do the things that we should. And really, we're thought of as good teens or even great teens if we just don't do all the bad stuff. If we're not, you know, sleeping around and experimenting with drugs and drinking and partying, we're considered good teens just because of what we're not doing. But what are we actually doing? And that's another indication of how low our culture's expectations for teenagers really are.
Mm-hmm. Can you comment on that as well, Brett?
I'm sorry?
I'd like for you to talk about the expectations we have. They're pretty negative when it comes to teens.
Well, it's really difficult and sad to hear a lot of young people explain to us their frustration about the fact that whether it be their parents, teachers, or any number of well-meaning adults.
And we're just trying to figure out the echo problem with one of our guests so we can hear things just fine. What about those people? You highlight some of them in the book, and we are familiar with their stories because they become quite famous. Those young people who really don't think of themselves as teenagers, who were doing extraordinary things when they were in their teen years or even before they were in their teen years, mm-hmm. Alex?
Yes. Well, we share the stories in the book of men and women like George Washington, you know, first president of the United States, David Farragut, who was the Navy's U.S. Navy's first admiral, and also Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross. And we share the stories of their teen years. And what's fascinating is that a lot of times we just read about what they did as adults. But what we don't read about is what they did as young people to prepare for those history-making adult years. And so we find out that George Washington, he was born in a middling-ranked family. His father died when he was just 11 years old. He wasn't considered very bright, and yet he applied himself to his studies. And so by the age of 16, he had mastered geometry, trigonometry,
Woo!
And surveying, which was the modern equivalent of calculus and algebra. And he was able to step into an amazing job at the age of 16 as official surveyor of Culpeper County, Virginia, which was pioneer work. He was out in uncharted territory, mapping and charting that territory using heavy logs and iron chains. Those were his measuring equipment. And he was making, at 17, the modern-day equivalent of $120,000 a year. So George Washington, he was a man at 17 years old. David Farragut, he was, as I said, the Navy's first admiral, but he began his career at sea when he was 9 and a half. He was a naval cadet on the warship Essex, and at age 11, he saw his first battle, and this is the part that blows me away. At age 12, he was put in command of his first ship. He was actually given command of a ship, its captain, its British captain, and its crew in the War of 1812, and instructed to take them back to the United States after a successful battle, and he successfully completed that mission. Clara Barton, she's, you know, known as the founder of the American Red Cross, has served millions upon millions upon millions of people. But she was the little girl who was terrified at the sight of blood, who was one of the shyest girls you'll ever meet. And her life was changed when she was 12 because her older brother fell off the roof of the barn, was badly injured, and she was so frantic, she loved him so much that she begged to be able to help take care of him. And it was there that she discovered, that others discovered, that she had all of the gifts of a natural nurse. And so she took over his care, and then she became pretty much a nurse to her whole village in Oxford, Massachusetts, in her teen years. And all of these stories are examples of young people who really accomplished incredible things, were given high levels of responsibility, and they not only survived, but they thrived. They stepped up to the plate. And we can say, oh, well, of course they did some neat things when they were young because they went on to be famous. But that's not how it works. They were only able to go on to be president, to go on to be admiral, to go on to be the founder of the American Red Cross because as young people, they stepped beyond what seemed like obstacles, what seemed like weaknesses, what seemed like impossibilities, and they took responsibility, grew to meet that responsibility, and became the men and women that we know them for today.
Alex, was it asking too much of them? And we think now 12-year-olds, or maybe it's because we live a little bit longer, that those kinds of incredible responsibilities in leadership that you talked about, you have to say, what about childhood?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. In our culture today, we look around and say, well, our affluence has really allowed us to reach the point where we don't have to work hard as young people. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. That's a sign of our progress. And if you view responsibility as this big weight that you have to pick up and lug around with you, then maybe that is correct. Maybe we just want to try to put that off as long as possible. But what you see in culture today is that we have this new phenomenon, and it's called, sociologists call it adolescence or kidults. These are teenagers in their 20s and 30s and 40s and beyond. Basically, they're people who never grow up. They're physically adults, but they're emotionally and in every other way still acting like adolescents, even late in life.
Right.
And the truth is, and what sociologists say, is you don't become responsible by flipping a switch. You become responsible by actually exercising responsibility, by taking responsibility. Mm. And if you don't, you won't be ready to be responsible. You won't be ready for the demands of adulthood in the modern world. You will still be living with your parents in your mid-30s and jumping from job to job and relationship to relationship and direction in your life. And that's a real problem. So what we would say in response to that argument, oh, want to do that, is that responsibility, as it's historically been understood, as we believe is the right understanding, is a muscle that you have to work out. And if you don't work it out, you're setting yourself up for disappointment, for failure, and really for being unprepared when the hard things of life come at you. You're going to do hard things by being unprepared, or you're going to be able to be prepared because you have chosen to do hard things.
Mm-hmm. How did you become so responsible, you and your brother?
I think a lot of it just goes back to our parents and the way they really modeled doing what was right, doing what was important, doing things that they believed were critical for their family, for the work that they were doing, even when it was difficult. They really modeled that for us. The dedication of our book is to our parents, Greg and Sono Harris. This book is The Message of Your Life. And now they never used the phrase do hard things, and they definitely weren't applying this concept directly to teenagers, but they did model that. They did teach that to us and to our siblings. They had high expectations for us. They encouraged us to step outside our comfort zones, to do more than what's commonly expected or required of young people in our society, because they knew that we were capable, and they knew that if we were challenged and then also supported in that, that we could grow, that we could go beyond that. Mm-hmm. And that was huge. Basically, even though we grew up in a culture of low expectations, we were blessed with parents who created a culture in our family and in the other families who we knew and grew up with and our friends and all of our acquaintances, where there were higher expectations. And because of that, we feel it's not like we can take credit for it. It's not like we can say, oh, look at us, look what we did. It's really a matter of saying we've been blessed, immensely, mm-hmm. to be able to grow up where these low expectations are not in place. But that doesn't just mean it's true for us. It means it's true for all young people. And if they can, stop thinking the way our culture tries to make young people think about the teen years, they also can grow, become more responsible, and really achieve amazing things. And the stories that we're hearing, the stories we're constantly coming across, the stories we're hearing back from people who've read the book are just amazing at what young people really are capable of doing when they get beyond our society's low expectations.
We're going to welcome phone calls. I think we'll have many of them for our guest. Alex Harris is joining us. We were having problems with the phone line with Brett, so we're just going to go with Alex rather than try to figure this out in midstream. Alex and his twin brother, Brett, are the co-authors of Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. They have reached hundreds of thousands of teens lives with their challenge to rebel against low expectations and to do hard things. They're going to be on a tour this summer, actually. They're coming to five major cities across the United States this summer with a conference, a one-day event for teens by teens who believe that their generation ready for a change. They reached some 16,200 teens, parents, and youth workers last year, and we're going to welcome phone calls for them. You know, what do you think about this? Do you think we have incredibly low expectations of teenagers? Do we need to give them more of a sense of responsibility? What about this? I want to ask him, what about this natural rebellion that you got to break away from your family and your moms and your dads at some point? And so there might be just naturally rocky years in there as you experiment with who it is you are. And so the teen years are naturally filled with, you know, trying a little bit of risky behavior to figure out, you know, where you are in this world. We'll talk with him about that and welcome your calls. So, and the email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder, those of you who listen to Nancy Pearl on this program, and I know that many of you do, we had her on last week, and she talks about books. It takes us a while to compile the whole list. So book recommendations from Nancy Pearl will be on the website if you go to it right now. It's WPR.org, WPR.org. So join the conversation here about teenagers. Our lines are open. We were having some phone problems, but try us right now because I'm really interested in what you think about our expectations for teenagers, how we give teenagers responsibility, or should we just give them a time for fun during those years because you have a whole hard life of work ahead of you? What about this culture that teenagers are experiencing right now? I'm enough of a prude, I guess, to worry about the sexual innuendo and, you know, I don't know. It's a bit much for me. So we certainly welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. As the calls are coming in, Alex Harris, he and his brother, twin brother, author of To Do Hard Things. Let me ask you about, you know, what psychologists say are a natural time of rebellion, that with the teenage years are the time you figure out who you are, and you got to do it in opposition, perhaps, many of us, to who your parents are. It's just a natural time of struggle, and so maybe you're not meant to be very responsible during those years.
Yeah, well, I think that's a common view. The thing is, and really the fascinating thing, is that if you look in other cultures, if you look throughout history, you don't find this natural rebellion occurring, you know, during what we call the teen years. What you find is that there was a pretty seamless transition from childhood to adulthood. And really, where this came from was, if you go back just about 100 years or so, all the school reform, labor law reforms that took place just around the turn of the century, coming into the 20th century, which, just to clarify before I go further, were good reforms that protected young people from harsh factory conditions, that made sure they were being educated. But at the same time, these were big changes. If you look at the year 1900, only 1 out of 10 young people who we would today call teenagers attended high school, only 1 out of 10. And then things changed a lot because for the first time in history, young people were mandated to attend school through high school. They were mandated to, you know, not be in the workforce. They were excluded from the workforce entirely for the first time in history. And so what happened, and this is where this modern view of adolescence came from, was that suddenly you have this huge segment of the population that before were key contributors, key producers in society, and now we're entirely consumers, and they had to be occupied, preoccupied, and entertained. And so suddenly you have the birth of what we have today, modern youth culture. You have products and advertising and TV shows and everything pretty much pushed by, driven by the desires, wants, and the market that teenagers make up. That's unique. You don't see that at any other point in history. And that rebelliousness really is an aspect of that. That rebelliousness is part of that social stereotype that has come to be the accepted norm. But again, if you look at other cultures, if you look before this change took place, you don't see that. And so I think a lot of the rebelliousness that you see is, number one, a symptom of the fact that young people are caught in this limbo stage where they're not children, but they're not adults yet, and they have a lot of the desires and the capabilities of adults, but none of the responsibilities,
right.
None of the opportunities, and it's a frustrating place to be. And at the same time, I think you also have young people, because I'm not just putting all the blame on grown-ups or anything like that. Brett and I definitely are speaking to the young people and telling them to take charge of their own lives. Young people, we like the fact that there are low expectations. It's convenient that we're expected to be rebellious when our parents make a decision that we don't like. It's very convenient because everyone expects us to blow up at them and to brush them off, to not listen to them, and then do our own thing. If that's expected, if that's normal, that's super convenient. And so for a lot of young people, you know, we've challenged young people, don't let the low expectations set you up to cut you off from the wisdom of past generations, from parents who love you and who want what's best for you. And really, for a lot of young people, it's more just a response to the low expectations, trying to get away with things, or just being really frustrated by that and being stuck in that limbo stage.
Let's go to some calls. Sue from East Troy. Hi, Sue.
Good morning. Actually, I am going to put some of the blame back on adults and parents in particular. I think you guys are probably aware of some of the Love and Logic work that's done. And it talks about how parents need to give age-appropriate responsibility, and then along with that responsibility, allow the child to experience consequences. And I guess my observation is that too often, parents are reluctant to allow a child to experience consequences of their behavior, and then therefore they don't ever learn. So that's my comment, and I'll just take any of your comments off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Sue.
Yeah, well, I think that's definitely true. And Brett and I, just because we're not parents, we don't try to speak to parents or you know, criticize too much, because we honestly think there's a lot of blame to spread around. This is not something that that's limited just to parents or just to teens. Really, if you look back, the word teenager, which we obviously use all the time, our culture uses all the time, we're all used to that word, phrase, idea, its first documented use was in Reader's Digest in 1941. So we're talking about less than 70 years that we've lived in a world where this word, this idea, really existed, and yet it's become completely normal. It's what we all live in. It's what we're all used to. So my generation, my parents' generation, really were some of the first to grow up in that new world. And it's like breathing. It's like a fish in water. We don't know what it's like not to be wet. So it takes a lot of, you know, reprogramming, rethinking, paradigm shifting to kind of break out of this view, like she said, you know, for parents, of not giving their children increasing age-appropriate responsibility. And it takes a lot of work. It requires parents to do hard things in order to identify when their young people, their children, are ready for increased responsibility, because all children are different. Some will be ready for more at earlier ages. Some will be ready for less at the same age. But when you have parents, when you have teachers, when you have adults in a child, in a teenager's life who care about them and are really, you know, involved in their lives, then you can see that take place. And that's what happened. Kathleen, Brett and I shared the story of our dad coming in with that stack of books.
Right. I love that story.
Summer. And that was our father taking the initiative, intervening into a kind of a summer of limbo for us, where we didn't really have a whole lot of direction, and providing that. And that changed the course of the next 5 years of our lives.
Right. Well, you also, there were some activities you were involved in that really laid a course for you in open opportunities, and being a former speech teacher in high school, I love this, is that you were working on debate, right? You were preparing arguments and doing an incredible amount of research, learning how to study in a wonderful way, and it served you very well. You didn't know it would, but it sure did.
Well, yes, and that's another example of, you know, our parents who they didn't have an idea of what exactly where that would lead either, but they encouraged us, they supported us in being involved in competitive speech and debate. And so we were heavily involved in that for a number of years, for about 2 or 3 years in high school, and that was probably the biggest thing for us because, you know, honestly, public speaking is probably one of the biggest fears of most Americans. I think statistically speaking, most Americans would rather die than speak in front of people. They're more afraid of public speaking than they are of death. And so that was something where, from a early age, we learned to step outside that comfort zone, to grow that comfort zone, and to learn how to communicate, to learn how to think and to analyze information, how to organize information in our minds, and then to communicate that information effectively. And that serves anybody. And actually, that's one of those hard things that we encourage young people to develop. That's the type of thing, it doesn't get easier as you get older. The teen years really are the ideal time for us to take that time to prepare. And that's why we call the teen years the launching pad, the training ground of life, because we have a unique opportunity. Yes, some of these things can happen later, but this is a unique opportunity where habits are built, where skills are developed, where new skills are learned that we're not going to have at any other point in our life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're an incredibly accomplished speaker. I must pay you that compliment because it's true.
You're
very, very, very smooth. Let's go next to Jenna. Jenna's calling from La Crosse. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Doing well. This is my first time calling, so thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to ask your guest if he went to a private, public, or home school, and if his experience that he had affected his outcome. I know he's talked a lot about his parents, but I just wanted to shift focus a little bit on his schooling. And if he did go to public school or whatever schooling he did have as a teenager, does he think that the teachers need to be more influential of their students? He talks about his great home life, but I've dealt with students who don't have that home life that he's talking about. So how can these kids reach the potential that he's talking about and how to live big? And I'll take his answer off.
That's a good question. Thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, Jenna, thank you for that question. Brett and I were homeschooled, and that was a decision our parents made very early on, back when homeschooling was not, when it was even more crazy than it is now, back before people really knew what that was. And that was a hard decision for them. That was not something they just kind of decided to do one day. They really thought about it a lot, prayed about it a lot. But that was a sacrifice they chose to make. And so when I talk about my parents really modeling what it means to do hard things, part of that was that sacrifice they made, not because they think or we think that everybody needs to homeschool or should homeschool because it's not the perfect thing for everyone, but they believed it was the right thing for their family, and so they did everything they could to make it work. And we've seen great fruit from that. And for Brett and I, homeschooling gave us a lot of flexibility we wouldn't have had otherwise. We were able to focus on different things in different seasons. We were able to graduate early and really focus on the work we're doing now, even starting, 16, 17. And so that was a real blessing. At the same time, I do want to clarify what we're talking about, the challenges, the low expectations, reaching for higher expectations. That's not limited, definitely, to people who homeschool. We feel like for our parents, that gave them the ability more than they would have otherwise to really have high expectations for us and encourage us to pursue those. But we've seen countless stories of young people and heard back from many teachers in public schools, in private schools, who've read the book, who've incorporated the message into their classes. And it's been amazing to hear back from young people who really have been so impacted by teachers who have high expectations for them. So in our case, our parents were our teachers. In other cases, teachers are not your parents for most young people. But either way, there really is, we know, a critical role for teachers, for those people who really do play such a pivotal role in the lives of the young people in our country, in our modern world, to have high expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the low expectations that we see honestly do come from the classroom, do come from parents do come from churches, come from pretty much everywhere. As one education expert put it, this is a quote that we use that we think is accurate. In a lot of ways, the ceiling for students is where the floor should be. Hmm. And that can seem extreme, but we think it's extremely true. And it's not just in the area of academics, because we see it really across the board, both academically, socially, just in issues of maturity and purpose and direction, and, you know, even just caring and understanding about important things. Young people aren't expected to do that, but they can do that, and they just need adults, they need someone in their life to say, you don't have to live this way. It hasn't always been this way. It doesn't have to be this way. And that's a powerful message for a young person to hear.
Thank you so much for the call. Here's an email that's come from Danielle from Madison. Do you think that some of the problems that teens face today are because there are so many choices available? I know it's a lot harder to choose an apple at the supermarket when I have 20 selections versus two or three. Is something similar going on in choosing a life path?
That's a great question, and I think that's definitely part of it. Sociologists, when we talk about the kidults or adolescence phenomenon, a lot of what they say is contributing to this problem is the fact that young people are looking at the big world out there, and they're seeing all these options, all these choices, all these career paths, all these majors, all these colleges, all these, you know, whatever it is. And it's a lot of decisions, and it's hard. And that's where I think the problem is, that you have young people who are going through the teen years, going through life, going to school, and graduating, and never having any sense of direction. You know, for Brett and I, you know, we're in college now, and we're blessed to be at a school where, by far, more than any other place we've been, the young people have a sense of direction and calling on their lives. But for a lot of young people, they go through high school because that's what you do, and then they go to college because that's what comes after high school, but not necessarily because they have a real sense of this is where I'm going. So they'll change majors half a dozen times. And the problem is, and I think the solution is, even in the face of all these decisions, young people can be equipped, they can be prepared by parents, by teachers, by other mentors in their lives to have a sense of direction now, to get a sense of what are they passionate about now, what makes them angry, what upsets them, what makes them cry, what are those things in the world that get them excited, and then to say, okay, maybe this is something that you have been especially equipped to be effective.
Right.
And let's start now, not after you graduate from college and you're trying to find a job and trying to decide what to do with your life. Let's start now pursuing a direction, because even if that's not the path that you're going to take for the rest of your life, the skills you'll learn, the planning that will take place, and just the sense of purpose that will instill into your life is itself a huge antidote to that. Mm-hmm. Paralysis of options, and so that we think, and that's why we're challenging young people as teenagers, not after all of that, to really begin to say, I'm going to start taking responsibility, I'm going to start plotting a course, because some course is better than no course.
Right.
And you can't beat a plan with no plan, and for young people, for a lot of times, they don't have any direction, they're not given any direction, and they don't even realize that they should have a direction until it's too late, and suddenly they're in the middle of a big ocean without a paddle, and that's a bad place to be.
Yeah. On the other hand, I mean, I love what you say about having a passion. I think you simply have to, but you also need to be going in. You need to understand the world. You need to be educated, because I think that you bring up this basketball player. All he wanted to do was play basketball, and he was one heck of a basketball player. But that's all he did, at the neglect of some of the other things that you need to do to get by, right? Or to follow your passion.
Absolutely. And that's part of where, as young people, we need adults to come alongside us. One of Brett's and my favorite passages in the Bible is Proverbs 13, verse 20, where it says, those who walk with the wise grow wise. Mm. And another passage that we love says, the glory of young men is their strength, But the glory of old men is their gray hair, which in that time really symbolized wisdom and life experience. And so, you know, as young people, you know, our glory is our strength. We have a lot of energy, and we don't necessarily know what to do with it. And sometimes we use it in ways that are destructive. And older men and women, they have life experience, they have resources, connections, they know what needs to be done in a way that they didn't as young people, and the way that as mm-hmm. current young people we don't know, but they don't necessarily have the time or even the energy to see that happen. And so what's amazing is when you can bring wisdom and strength together. And that's what a mentoring relationship looks like. That's what, in you know, an ideal situation, a parent-child relationship will look like. And so that's what we really see as being so important because, as you just said, it's important to have passion, but it's also important to keep in mind that you can't just, like that young man who loved basketball, work on one thing and neglect all the other important things. Or even, you know, take another example. A lot of young people want to be musicians. They want to be, you know, musical artists. They want to be famous. And so they focus on the singing and the music, but they don't focus at all on the business side of things. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, you can't succeed just as an artist unless you have some understanding, some grasp of the very important business side of the music industry. And that's a very practical, very specific example, but it's true about all of life. You can't just major on the minors. You really have to take the time to prepare, to be well-rounded, to be educated, to be prepared. And that's, again, that's why it's important to not wait until after you graduate from high school or graduate from college to start on that path. And the amazing thing is young people, you know, they do yearn for higher expectations. The number one response we've received as we've gone around talking to young people is, this is what I've been feeling ever since I became a teenager, but I just didn't know how to put it into words. Hmm. That's the number one response we've gotten. And so we've just been amazed by how young people, in their hearts, believe that there has to be more to the teen years than what our culture says there is. And they're looking for an alternative. They're looking for another, better way, and mm-hmm. there's one out there.
Spoken as a true, wise old man, even though he's only 19 years old. Alex Harris is our guest. He and his twin brother are the co-authors of Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. We had his brother on with him, but the phone line was creating an echo, which makes it very hard to concentrate. So we are sorry that Brett couldn't join us as well, but Alex is carrying on just fine. Here's our phone number. One line is open. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and if you'd like to send an email, that's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Alex Harris, co-author with his teenage brother of Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. We go to Randy next. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. Living here in the country, what I found culturally, raising four boys and a girl, is that there's, as far as boys go, in rural areas, and I think this is true at least in the Midwest and perhaps across the country right now, boys are not rewarded for achieving high excellence academically. If they don't happen to be incredibly talented physically, and their parents are not well endowed with money, what you've got there is not a great. You have to replace. You have to let them rebel some way, and encourage them to get involved. If you've got a bright child, you've got another problem because you don't want that child to be sort of extricated sociologically. What I found is I replaced sort of the things of that a person might get from that you're talking about in one way or another by allowing the person to rebel in a protective way by watching what they were interested in and nurtured them along and allowed them to work and so on as they went. And what I'm just wondering, from your perspective, just simply, what are some of the acceptable ways, because boys are going to have to rebel. Now, I found ways to allow this to happen and not have it become dangerous, but what are the acceptable ways where boys that are talented can rebel in a sort of a socially acceptable way so you can get them along academically? Because if you look at the top 10 in our rural areas, there'll be 8 girls and 2 boys.
Right. What do you say, Alex?
Well, that's really so true. I think Brett and I have found, generally speaking, that low expectations affect young men in a lot of ways a lot harder than they do young women. And as he was saying, unless you're super talented athletically, unless you come from a family with a lot of money, and I'll just mention, Brett and I are neither super talented athletically or come from a family with a lot of money. But it's pretty true. If you don't have those two things, it's pretty hard to get anywhere, to really overcome the obstacles in your path. And that's really an example of, especially for young men, we do have high expectations in some areas. It's ironic. In sports, we expect young people to do hard things. In sports, we expect them to sacrifice everything for it. We expect them to get up really early, to work really hard. We expect them to make sacrifices for the team. We expect them to really excel in that area, and they do, a lot of them. But at the same time, you turn around and you look, okay, academically, and for most young men, there's not high expectations, and there's not really a system in place that really helps them to thrive. And so, again, the question is how do they? What are socially acceptable? What are good ways to rebel? And for Brett and I, our message, we call it the revolution. It's meant to be a good type of rebellion as opposed to a bad type of rebellion. We combine the words rebellion and revolution and came up with a word that we define as a teenage rebellion against low expectations. And that's the type of rebellion that I'd encourage young men and young women to join in. If they're stuck in that situation, this is something you can do. This is something that you need to do, really, to get out from under the low expectations that are in place. And so, for young people that we've talked to, one of the ways I'd encourage you that you can, find an avenue for that type of healthy rebellion is something new, something that generations before us didn't have, and that's the Internet. We've been amazed by how the Internet has helped people, even in rural areas, even separated from other like-minded young people, from people who believe in them, can find people who do believe in them, find people who do share their vision, who are excited about the same things online. And for Brett and I, that's our story. Everything we're doing, the seeds for the book, for the conferences we're doing now, it started as a blog. It started as us. We live out in the country in Oregon. It started with us starting a blog. And then other young people found us, and they started saying things like, "This is what I'm missing at school. This is what I'm missing at church. This is what I've been feeling." And it's grown into what it is now.
It's
now
huge now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now it's really big. It started as just 2 16-year-old guys who didn't know what to do with themselves one summer, who started a blog. That's really how it started. And so that's what's so amazing is that the Internet really gives young people an ability to reach beyond the physical limitations of where they are. And that's an amazing thing. That's an amazing opportunity. And we've seen young people, some of the most amazing stories are stories of young people who use that to connect with other young people, to connect with other people, and to do something amazing, to really mm-hmm. rebel in a lot of ways against the low expectations and the low expectations that are really systematized in our culture today.
Thanks.
By using the internet. It's an amazing thing.
Randy, for the call, let's go to Mary from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a teacher of some 29 years, and I've taught high school and college level. And I know there was a comment before about parents and their role. But I'd like to say that when I'm asked over the years, gee, have the kids changed? My answer is usually no, but the parents sure have. And excuse me, not all of them. I have wonderful supportive parents, but there are so many what I call helicopter parents that the minute a kid is tried to be held to a higher level, they're saying that the teacher is unfair, the teacher is asking too much, that this, you know, shouldn't happen. And it's not just high school. I have colleagues at the university level that say they hand back papers and the kids look at their grades, whip out their phones, and tell the professor that their parent is on the line and would like to speak with them about their grade because they're not pleased. And that, to me, is just unbelievable. And like I said, not all parents. I work with some wonderfully supportive ones, but I think the parents have to step up to the plate too and go along with this and challenge their children and make them take the responsibility as well.
That's very true. And Brett and I have seen that. Definitely a lot of young people where their parents are waiting on the wings constantly to make sure that nothing bad ever happens, that you know, they're not overly burdened, that they never get bad grades, and if they do, that, you know, they'll go down kicking and screaming. And it's not healthy. It's not helpful. It's not helpful for the young people. It's definitely not helpful to the teachers who are trying to hold up higher standards. And a lot of it goes back to the fact that both parents and teenagers and most of our culture have bought into what we call the myth of adolescence, this view of the teen years as a vacation from responsibility, as a time to goof off, have fun, kind of just coast along before real life starts. And if we do have high expectations, it's not really about competence or character. It's more about good grades and getting into a good school. And so, you know, if anything threatens that, then you see this big, you know, big response, but there's not really that same concern for the actual practical competence, intelligence, and education, and true character of the young people, and that's a problem. And I think for parents, for Brett and I, as we'll eventually be moving into that season of our lives, you know, our desire is to be parents who care about the whole person, not just about the grade point average, and who really are encouraging high expectations, not just you better get good grades and if anything happens, let us know because we'll talk to your teacher, but rather says we expect you to work hard, we expect you to learn, to grow, and then actually is excited and encourages teachers and professors to have those high standards because the goal is not just success in some, you know, numbers on a page type of scale. The goal is really to be responsible, effective, competent people for the long run, for our whole lives.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back. We only have a couple minutes left. Let's get back to where we started, and that's the summer where you read all these great books, which I think is a great way to spend a summer because this ties into it. This email from Decorah, Iowa. Cade writes this: my generation seems to be obsessed with a dangerous combination of entitlement and entertainment saturation. How do you think that added responsibility at young ages can break through this perceived need for constant stimulation? How do you propose to pry a teen away from their Xbox to a lifetime of hard work?
That's a great, great question.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've found is that we don't have to argue with young people. We're not, you know, up there saying, you're capable of so much more. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. You know, it doesn't go that way. What we found is that when we share stories, and I know we're running out of time here, but when we share stories of young people who at age 15 are fighting slavery, have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, who have spoken at the White House, and we talk about young people who, starting at age 9, began raising money for AIDS orphans in Africa, and today at age 14 have raised over $1 million and built a high school and two medical centers in Zambia. When we tell stories of ordinary young people who are doing amazing things, we found that we don't have to argue with young people. They realize, you know what, that's a little bit more exciting than a night at the mall or at the movies could ever be. And it's a vision for a more fulfilling life, a life that's spent doing hard things, but also, you know, being rewarded for living that way, mm-hmm. for thinking that way. And that's what we hold up, and that's what we found young people respond to. They're content with what they have because that's all they've been offered. But there's something else out there.
Yeah. The website people should go to is what, Alex?
DoHardThings.com.
Hey, there you go. You've made that easy. All right. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a great hour.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you. Our best to your brother. I'm sorry the phone thing didn't work. It should have. Thank you. Our guest, Alex Harris, he and his twin brother, who are 19 years old now, are the authors of Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. And you go to Do Hard Things on the internet and you'll find the work that they are doing. Thanks. That was a listener request, and I don't know how you heard of these people, but it was a really interesting hour, so thanks, listener. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing the hour, and thanks to Jolema Noel and Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee and for all of your calls as well. We'll be with you again tomorrow. Great conversation ahead here on the Ideas Network, so stay tuned. The news is coming up in a moment, and we'll be with you again at 9 tomorrow. Thanks for listening.